there, we'll go into it.
Nueva canción, eres tú con quien voy a estrenar esta melodía, melodía. Mi canción de amor te despierta como el sol que llama a tu puerta. Eres tú con quien voy a estrenar esta melodía. Baby, baby, a mi mundo musical. Y pásate al baile. Mi canción de amor te despierta como el sol que llama a tu puerta. Me gusta.
To say Uhuru to the listeners in the Uhuru community, although I would also like to say Nanga Def to all of our people that speak Wolof. I would like to say Yebo to our listeners in South Africa. I would like to say Habarigani for those who speak Swahili. I'd like to say Akwaba to our people in Ghana. And my name is Norman Otis Richmond. And I'm speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And we came out of the box with a song by Barry White. And Barry White hails from Los Angeles, California, by way of Texas. And he was a comrade of Mr. Jesse Belvin, who this tribute is a tribute to Jesse Belvin. And Barry White played on one of Jesse Belvin's first records. But I have been silent for almost 2 years now. This is the first time I've been on radio since December of 2008, so I might be a little bit long-winded, but I wanted to bring my brother Binga back in, and let's start this show, and I hope we have a very good time. I hope to be with you for the next 2 hours. So, Binga, what's up?
Oh, man, feeling good, especially after that last song, that Barry White song. And it's good to be on the program with you. And so I'm looking forward to the next couple of hours.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk about the you know, the history of African people in Los Angeles, and you know, essentially the black community had been in LA for forever, but I wanted to concentrate on the African community since World War II, and I wanted to just take my personal situation and kind of outline, like, the history of Africans in Los Angeles. But, you know, the majority of African people in Los Angeles and in California, period, hail from Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas. And if you could look at the leadership of the Black Panther Party, and that's reflected in the leadership, Bobby Seale was born in Texas. Huey P. Newton was born in Louisiana, and Lil Bobby was born in Arkansas. And my family moved to Louisiana to California in the late 40s, mid 40s, and I was born in Arcadia, Louisiana, which is in the Bienville Parish. In Louisiana, we have parishes, Bienville Parish. So we came from Louisiana to California. And my father and grandfather worked inside the aerospace industry. My father and grandfather were sand testers, and they worked. They made planes, wings for airplanes, I guess, building up that whole war thing. And my mother and grandmother, on my father's side, worked in the they worked for the county. My mother was worked in the inside the hospitals. So we came from a working class. I came from a working class background, and I would think that many of the Africans, their story is similar. Is that similar? And what happened was, you know, after, you know, coming from the South, many of us who were not born in the South, and those of us who were born in the South came to California and refused to take a lot of the stuff that our parents had taken. So in 1965, there was a great urban rebellion in Los Angeles, and it's known as the Watts Riot. And the area that I lived in was called Slauson. Yeah, I went to Fremont, and for most of my high school, except 1 year, I went to Washington High School, because I shouldn't be saying this, but I was kicked out of Fremont. And Fremont is where the a lot of the resistance in 65, a lot of the people that led the resistance came out of Fremont High School, or lived in that area. And I'm talking about people like Ron Wilkins, who went on to be a leader in SNCC. I'm talking about people like Kumasi, who was in prison with George Jackson. He was he was in the film Made in America, and also another brother by name Bird. They all came out of the same area that I came out of. Al Prentice, Bunchy Carter, who went on to lead the Panthers, he also came out of that particular area. And you know, in 60, around that period, I became slightly political, because I had gone to the Nation of Islam. I never joined, but I went to the mosque when I was 14 years old, and so I knew a little bit about the Nation. And Malcolm recruited, the Nation of Islam came to Los Angeles in the early 60s, and Malcolm sent people out to L.A., and they parked really parked themselves in the area where I lived. And I had to leave Los Angeles in 67 because I refused to fight in Vietnam, and I came to Toronto, Canada, and I can't go into all the details, but that's briefly a little bit about L.A., and it's most of the people, like I say, in L.A. came from Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, quite a few from Oklahoma, and a few from Mississippi, but that'll give you a little background about the history of Los Angeles.
Now, how was Los Angeles music scene?
Musically, Los Angeles was, first of all, you know, when you live in a place, you really don't realize how different it was. Los Angeles, we were sort of isolated because a lot of people, when they traveled during the ancient times, couldn't get past Chicago. For example, you know, we had the churches, of course, and we had jazz clubs, and we had R&B groups. For example, you know, the church, one of the churches that I went to, Victory Baptist Church, had a great choir. But I mean, we had a great gospel scene and a great R&B scene. But we were kind of isolated because everybody was, most of African people were on the, you know, in Chicago and into the east. But we produced, you know, a number of great artists. Jesse Belvin being the biggest thing that would have come out of L.A. But I mean, he was killed when he was 27. So the music scene in L.A. Like, you had Eric Dolphy. He played on Coltrane Spiritual. I hear that song on the African Redemption Show. Yeah. The Spiritual, Eric Dolphy. We had Melba Liston, a great woman named Melba Liston. She played a trombone. She worked a lot with Randy Weston. We had Odetta. Odetta sang at Martin Luther at the, you know, the March on Washington. We had Lester, I can't remember the brother, saxophonist. Roy Ayers came out of L.A. Came out of L.A. We also had the Penguins. That's a vocal group that did Earth Angel, which is one of the songs that Jesse Belvin wrote. And Jane Cortez, she married Ornette Coleman. Jane Cortez and Ornette Coleman came to L.A., but he was originally out of Texas himself. So we had, we were well represented. Gloria Jones, she wasn't born in L.A., but she lived out there. I should mention Darlene Love. She did a lot of work with Sam Cooke and the Righteous Brothers and so on and so forth. So it was thriving, but we were really isolated.
Can you talk about Jesse Belvin's place in the L.A. musical scene?
Jesse Belvin was the man when it came to the music scene in L.A. Jesse Belvin was the idol of everybody wanted to be like Jesse, even though we didn't know, we didn't even realize it at the particular time. But Jesse started recording as a youth, and he used to basically give away his songs for, he would write a song on the spot and, you know, give him $100, and come up with all of these songs, and he didn't copyright his things. He loved music so much. They say he, for example, there was a story I heard his son say that his mother needed some items for the house, and you know, he had some songs he wrote. He would go down to Hollywood, sell the songs, and come back with, you know, groceries and whatever she needed. He was that type of brother. But he wrote this song, Earth Angel, and Barry White, like I say, Earth Angel was a song that his first particular hit, and that's also in that Back to the Future film. They ripped him off of that. And Goodnight, My Love is, I guess that's his signature tune, and Goodnight, My Love was Alan Freed, who's supposedly legendary figure in rock and roll, used to end all of his syndicated radio shows with "Good Night, My Love," and Harold Melvin says that, you know, before they really made it big, that's how they would end all of their shows. Harold Melvin, who is a great singer himself, he would end the shows with good night, my love. So he had an impact. And also in Jamaica, in Jamaica in particular, Jesse was huge, huge, huge.
You know, we've got some of those songs like Night My Love. I want to play that for the listeners who may not have had the opportunity to hear it or might have heard it and don't realize that you were hearing Jesse Belvin. So let's play Good Night My Love.
Let's do that.
Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams and sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright and bring you closer to me. There's just one thing I'd like to know. Is your love still warm for me? Or has it grown cold? If you should awake in the still of night, please have no fears, for I'll be there. You know I can. Please give your love to me, dear, only. Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams. Sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright and bring you closer to me. If you should awake in the still of night, please have no fears, for I'll be there. You know I care. Please give your love to me, dear, only. Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams and sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright and bring you closer to me. Good you.
I knew the vision of your love, loveliness. I hoped and I pray that someday I'll be the vision of your happiness. Oh, oh, earth angel, earth angel.
Sir, now that was the Penguins, and Barry White is 11 years old, and he's playing the piano on that particular tune. And the Penguins came out of John C. Fremont High School, which is you know, the area that I grew up in.
So, and before that, we played "Goodnight, My Love," and we heard Jesse Belvin singing, and Jesse Belvin wrote both of those, right?
Yes, sir. Now, Jesse came from a school called Jefferson. He went to Jefferson High School, which is where Etta James went, and Roy Ayers. I know that you play Roy Ayers. That's one of your favorites on the radio. He went to that school, but Jesse was the leader of a street organization. I guess the Euro-Americans would refer to them as gangs. And he spoke Spanish, and Etta James described him as being buff before buff. You know, he had a nice process, you know, during that particular time. I'm not going to criticize him for that, because I guess everybody had a process at that particular time. Even El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Malcolm, had that. He had a reputation of being, you know, quite, never heard about him being a womanizer, but he was quite a ladies' man. The women liked him. Loved him, but he married early. He married a woman by the name of Joanne, and she was also from the same area that we're from, and she was killed him as well. But he was died in 1960, so I don't know about, you know, his political consciousness, but he was, when he was killed, he was with Jackie Wilson and with Arthur Prysock in they were in Little Rock, Arkansas, doing a show. And this is from if you read a lot of the accounts today, they don't talk about how Jesse passed away. Jesse and Joanne passed away. What they might say is that what had happened was he had this driver by the name of Charles, who used to drive for Ray Charles, and he wasn't disciplined. So Ray Charles had fired him. Also, he drove for L.C. Cook, and L.C. fired him too. L.C. is Sam's brother, but, you know, that's what's going out there now. But the story is that they were doing a show in Little Rock, Arkansas, and Jackie Wilson and Arthur Prysock were on the show, and Jesse Belvin. And, you know, during that period, they had to do two shows, one for the blacks and one for the whites. Jackie refused to do the second show for the white fans, apparently. And they got into a little, you know, they supposedly, the LA Sentinel reported that they forced Jesse and Jackie and Arthur Price out off the stage at gunpoint. So they had to get out of Dodge. When they got out of Dodge, some of the white fans had cut Jesse's tire. And this was reported in the Norfolk Journal and Guide. I think that's the name of the particular paper. The headline was, "Who did racism kill Jesse Jesse Belvin?" And what had happened was they weren't just accident. Jesse died instantly. The guy, driver Charles, he died, and his wife Joanne lived a couple of days longer. And when the story is that when she found out that Jesse had passed, you know, she just basically gave up too. Mm-hmm. So Jesse was people really feel that he was murdered, and he died in Hope, Arkansas, which happens to be the hometown of your first black president, William Jefferson Clinton. And a few months later, they went. The same package went to New Orleans, a similar package. And Larry Williams, who was born in New Orleans, so I guess some of that Haitian roots came out. They tried to get him to stand up. He was sitting down singing, and a white police officer came and, you know, basically told him, you know, I guess the N word, you know, get up in thing. And Jackie decked, you know, they got the rumbling, and Jackie decked the police, so they scuffled, and they put Jackie and Johnny, Larry, pardon me, in jail for overnight. And, you know, I guess the ancestors, they got bail, they got out of Dodge, so, and that was all because of, you know, they just couldn't take that stuff anymore. And, Jesse, that's what Jesse was coming from.
And I've heard that Jackie was the type of cat that wouldn't take no mess.
You know, Jackie was a little. He was a boxer, and he was full of himself. But I guess if I were Jackie, wouldn't I be full of myself too? And he could throw some hands. Yeah, he could. Yeah, he could take care of himself, and didn't take any mess at all. Yeah, that was his reputation.
Yeah. Could you say just a little more about Jesse and even his wife? His wife was his manager, wasn't she?
Joanne Belvin was his manager wife. Like I say, he went to Jefferson, and Etta James, in her book, she says that had Jesse lived, he would have been bigger than Sam Cooke or even Nat King Cole. And she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and in her book, she says that she feels that Jesse should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because she really said that he was the most talented person to come out of her generation. Jesse left, he had two children. One of his sons, Jesse Belvin Jr., if you go on the internet, he has a MySpace page. He's out there singing. He does a lot of internet work. So he's carrying on the tradition of Jesse Belvin, and you know, everybody has recorded his songs, like Paul Anka did one of his tunes, and Gloria Estevan, I shouldn't even mention her on the radio, she's covered his stuff. And like I say, that film Back to the Future, they used a Caucasian cover version of Earth Angel. He's had an impact, but I mean, he passed away so long ago, and he is almost forgotten. And like I say, they really went back and sanitized his history, because no one really talks about the lynching aspect of his death. You know, they that's been cleaned up. You know, everything now is that this brother, his driver, Charles, was a undisciplined Negro who was drunk, and that's why Jesse passed away. There's nothing, there's very little about the fact that his tires were cut.
Now we got some more songs we wanna excuse me. We got some more songs we wanna play. One of them is "Open Up Your Eyes" by Eminem and the Peanuts. you say something about that song, bro? In the group,
yeah, open up your eyes was done by a group called M&M and the Peanuts, and I was a part of that particular group. Now this is a comical story because I started recording when I was 15, and I sang with a group called the Perennials. And, you know, we cut a little record. So I had a reputation, and I was recruited by this brother by the name of Willie Malone, who has since joined the Ancestors. And I recruited a brother by the name of Tommy Duro, who has since joined the Ancestors. And what had happened was Eminem and the Peanuts were two men and two women, two husband and wife teams. And Eminem was supposed to be Miller and Malone, and the Peanuts were their wives. And I was lived down the street from Willie Malone, who was really the leader of the group, and he recruited me. I replaced a woman, one of the women, because I could sing so high. So I suggested that they get Tommy Duro. Tommy Duro was out of New Orleans, and he, to this day, I still think he was one of the greatest singers that ever walked the earth. So we recorded quite a bit. Eminem and the Peanuts, we had this little lightweight hit, and it was a West Coast hit called Open Up Your Eyes, and really it was the Philly. But the thing about Open Up Your Eyes, what if you listen to Open Up Your Eyes, is really, we really ripped off, I didn't rip off anybody because I didn't write it, but it was Willie really ripped off Jesse, Girl of My Dreams. If you listen to the song, and then you play "Girl of My Dreams" after that by Jesse Belvin, you'll hear the similarities, and you'll also hear a young man by the name of Tommy Duro, who, in my judgment, was one of the greatest singers that I ever heard in my life. And this brother could stand toe to toe with he could stand toe to toe with Eddie in the OJs, because Eddie and the OJs were in LA, and we used to sing, you know, with on the shows with them, and he could stand toe to toe with Scotty and Walter of the Whispers. And if, you know, I think once people listen to this song, when they listen to Tommy, this man had he was a composite of Jackie Wilson, James Brown, and Sam Cooke. And I think when you hear the song, I'll make my point.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and play that. Eminem and the Peanuts singing Open Up Your Eyes.
And could you play Girl of My Dreams and right after that?
Yeah, we're going to Girl of My Dreams right after that by Jesse Belvin.
Why don't you open up your eyes so you can see how much your love is? girl of my dreams, where are you? Girl of my dreams, I'm so blue, doo-doo, how I yearn, how I long for you. If I could just hold your hand, surely then you would understand that it's you I adore forevermore. A love like mine is hard to find. It's fire, it's a raging flame. Although you won't hear my plea, that love is raging just the same. Girl of my dreams, what shall I do? Girl of my dreams, I'm sad and blue, doo-doo-doo. Can't go on without you, girl of my dreams. A love like mine is hard to find. It's fire, it's raging flame. Although you won't hear my plea, that love is raging just the same. Do-do-do, girl of my dreams, what shall I do? Girl of my dreams, I'm sad and blue, doo-doo-doo. Can't go on without you, girl of my dreams, girl of my dreams, girl of my dreams.
Yes, that was Jesse Belvin doing Girl of My Dreams. And as you heard Eminem and the Peanuts open up your eyes, we literally borrowed very liberally from from Jesse Belvin, right?
So when y'all recorded that, you were at Los Angeles City College?
I was just leaving Washington High School, going to Los Angeles City College. Yeah. Now, when I went to Los Angeles City College, when I got to Los Angeles City College, Al Bunche was going there at that particular time. Also, Sagitti, and we formed a group with Sagitti, Harold Clayton, and Ronji Sutherland, and they went on to write, Sagitti went on to write Baby Take Your Time, Do It Right for the SOS band. He also did some work with Eddie Kendricks and was on the Chocolate City with George Clinton. And he sang on the Chocolate City thing. So we had this year, we had groups at LACC, and also at LACC at that time was a brother by the name of Fred Goray. And Fred Goray went on to become Masai Kariga Kenyatta, and he was a big DJ in Detroit, WCHB, and when I was moving around Detroit, when I was in LA, I sang in a talent show, and he more or less became like my manager, Masai, and he used to drive me around like I was a big star, right? And when he came to Detroit, and I passed through Detroit, I was invisible then, and he gave me my first Bob Marley album, you know, the album, it was the Burning album, which was had the cigarette light, was like a cigarette lighter. He used to, like, give me these albums, and I remember him, he had all of the cuts, like, that he thought I would like. He eventually joined the Reverend Cliggs, the shrine of the Black Madonna. And at that time, I was in the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, and one of our members, Glanton Dowdell, painted that shrine of the Black Madonna. But no, at LACC, I think David T. Walker was there at that particular time too. No, LACC was a hotbed for talent. And then I got to work in the student union. I got drafted, and I refused to go to Vietnam, and that kind of ended my singing career because I have to tell you this story. We auditioned for Marvin Gaye, myself, Sagitti, Carol, and Ranji, and you know we were really on our way to go, but you know I got drafted, and then there was a whole lot of complications. But yeah, at LACC, we knew some very people that went on to be very, very big in the political as well as the musical world.
Now, excuse me. Now, you know, Jesse had a. You were talking earlier about Jesse having a large influence on the music scene in Los Angeles, but it was even past Los Angeles. Can you say something about, you know, just Jesse's relationships? I know you mentioned Etta James and her, how she was influenced by him, but there was other folks like Johnny Guitar Watson as well, right?
Johnny Guitar Watson, I should talk about the impact that Jesse had on Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye was living in Washington, D.C., where he was born, and he talked about going to the Howard Theater, which is like the Apollo or like the Fox in Los Angeles, and watching Sam Cooke and Jesse Belvin perform. And when he said he saw Jesse Belvin sing, he couldn't talk to anybody for 3 or 4 days. He would be trying to practice and, you know, get his chops up so he could sound like Jesse and Sam Cooke. But Jesse had Johnny Guitar Watson was played with Jesse. And there was a group called the Shields. I think they did You Cheated, You Lied, You Said That You Love Me. And Johnny played or sang on that particular time. They had a relationship. Johnny and Jesse had a relationship, but both of them were from Texas, right? And Etta James, like I say, Etta James talked about him big time. And Jesse was phenomenal in terms of his influence. He had a national impact, but like, it's very, very difficult to talk about Jesse because he only lived to like 1960. So, you know, there was we don't know what he would have done musically or even politically. You know, he sort of reminds me of Biggie Small in this sense. You know, like Biggie Small is criticized by some of the political people because, you know, a lot of stuff he made was not necessarily tied to the African liberation movement. But I don't know how old Biggie was when he passed away. He didn't live long enough, really, to we don't know what he would have. He might have moved to the right, more to the right, or maybe he would have moved to the left. We never know. And I think Jesse reminds me of that.
Mm. Yeah. I want to ask also, you know, because he had an impact on even Jamaica.
We have some contacts. We have some members who are college students in different places. We have people who have maybe still contacts at their old universities. We want people to dust off those phone books.
There are a lot of Jamaicans spread, you know, all over the world: Toronto, Miami, New York, London, and they have these collectors clubs where they collect these old records. And Jesse Belvin is a big, big, big part of that whole thing because the Blues Busters, who are sort of like Jamaican equivalent of Sam and Dave, they recorded some of Jesse's things. Also, the great John Holt. I would put John Holt is he's a crooner. He would be like a Luther Vandross type doing reggae. And he recorded a lot of Jesse's things. Also, there's a very good friend of mine by the name of Glenn Ricketts. He's the father of Glenn Lewis, the singer Glenn Lewis. He recorded a lot of Jesse's things. And there's another brother by the name of Jay Douglas, and he tells me that Jay Douglas is a singer from Toronto, that Alton Ellis. There's so many people that recorded Jesse's thing. Jesse's more or less like a fixture in the Jamaican pantheon. And the situation about what's unique about the Jamaican situation is that they do not music is not stale because they play the oldies like every Sunday. There's a station, one of the stations there. So if you today's Sunday, you can turn on the Jamaican radio station. I haven't been there in a few years, but you might hear Johnny Ace. Hmm. The first time I went to Jamaica, I went to this was in the early '80s, and I walked into the record store, and the first thing I saw was the Memorial album by Johnny Ace. And Johnny Ace has passed away in 1954, 1955. So Jesse is, had he gone to Jamaica, I don't know what kind of impact he would have because, you know, Sam went there two or three times and he had an amazing impact. But no, Jesse Belvin was, he ruled Jamaica. Do you have anything by John Holt that we could play to show?
Yeah.
Not a Jesse Belvin song, but could we play John Holt's doing, I guess, is it a Johnny Ace tune?
Yeah, we've got John Holt doing a Johnny Ace tune called "Pledging My Love." So
why don't you shoot that, fire that one up?
All right, let's do that. This is "Pledging My Love" by being sung by John Holt.
Forever, my darling, my love will be true. Always and forever, I love only you. Just promise me, darling, your love in return. Make this fire in my soul for the rest of my days. I'll never part from you and your loving ways. Of my days, I'll never part from you and your loving ways. No, I'll never part from you and your loving ways.
Yeah, Yeah, that's John Holt, and John Holt is, you know, one of the legendary crooners. He's known primarily as a lover of rock man, but I think if you see him today, he is he wears his hair like you, Binga, and he's singing a lot of still doing the lover's rock thing, but he's doing a few conscious things as well.
Hmm. Now, you know, the R&B, one thing about music and African people is there seem to be no kind of boundaries, you know, in terms of that really divide us. One of those things is how R&B may have kind of started as such in the U.S. By Africans here, found itself all in Jamaica, you know. So can you say a little something about that?
Well, Bob Marley used to work with a label in Jamaica, and Bob was the A&R man for the label, so Bob could listen to all of the music that came in, and I remember he talked about, you know, they would send samples to Jamaica of all the records because they were trying to get airplay. So, you know, Bob heard a lot of that particular stuff. But if you listen to early Bob Marley, mm-hmm. Bob was doing he was influenced heavily by Bobby Lester of the Moonglows, Sincerely. If you listen to Bob's early stuff, you can hear he was directly influenced by Bobby Lester, Sincerely, and Harvey and the Moonglows. It became Harvey and the Moonglows after Bobby Lester left the Moonglows. But the original lead singer was Bobby Lester, and then Harvey and the Moonglows, Marvin came in after that. But Bob was influenced by Bobby Lester in the beginning, and if you look at the Wailers started off as there was a whole bunch of Wailers, including women. But when they narrowed it down, it was, in the beginning, it was Bob, Peter, and Bunny Livingston, or Bunny Wailer. And I should say that Peter Tosh, Walde Simiyak, that's his African name, they patterned themselves after the Impressions, Fred Cash, Sam Gooden, and Curtis Mayfield. And, Sam Gooden is the brother, you know, the guy who sort of sounds like Jerry Butler. He's the bass and baritone. Hmm. That was Peter. And, you know, Bunny and Bob did the Curtis Mayfield thing. And if you look at their old promotional shots, you'll see the similarities, but they even dressed like the Impressions. Judy Marr, the I-3s. I think it was I-3s. There was Rita, Marley, Judy Mowat, and Judy Mowat, Marcia Griffiths, and so on and so forth. And Marcia Griffiths, they recorded Young, Gifted, and Black. Every song that they recorded in the United States, I shouldn't say every song, but there's a cover version for I would say 80% of the songs aren't the R&B songs that they recorded in the United States. They recorded in Jamaica. I was listening the other day. There's a brother out of Alabama who I love. They don't play his music on the radio, probably not even in the United States. Sir Charles Jones. Is Anybody Lonely? I love that brother. I think I gave Chioma a copy of him singing that. There's a reggae version of that, you know.
Hmm.
We're talking in the 21st century. It still goes on. I was reading. You know, everybody when they think about Peter Tosh, they think about this angry, tall, dark, handsome, angry African who was just, you know, he had no time for any kind of nonsense. But Peter says his favorite group is the Stylistics, and you know, I think, you know, he liked the a lot of the love songs. I remember Peter, when he came to Toronto, they put us together, because I was the most sympathetic, I guess, journalist to him at that particular time. And there was an Irish man by the name of Charles Comer, a real crazy Irish dude. I mean, he was. I think Charlie was a real revolutionary underground, right? He worked for Island Records. So the last time Peter came to Toronto, I spent the whole day with him. And I remember we were riding around, and the song How About Us, was that Champagne? Yeah. How About Us came on, and Peter sang the whole song. I said, man, I didn't know you liked them type of songs. He says, you know, what type of songs do you think I make love to my woman to? You know? he loved I guess like a lot of the in Jamaica. I mean, in terms, especially that falsetto thing is. I mean, Ray Goodman and Brown, the Stylistics, the Delphonics. I mean, they ruled Jamaica. The Manhattans almost performed there, not a falsetto singer, but Gerald Austin. I mean, I'm not going to say he could be prime minister, but he could definitely probably be the mayor of Kingston.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
I think that is, you could say the same in South Africa. You know, the R&B is huge in South Africa. I remember I have a CD called Live in South Africa by the Manhattans. And, man, if you listen to the screaming on there, it's like you would think it was Elvis or somebody was there. I mean, these sisters from South Africa are hollering and screaming and acting a fool, you know. And the Manhattans are singing, you know, Shining Star, you know, all of those tunes.
I think, you know, something that needs to happen. Well, it actually has happened a bit, you know. It's just a question of... because I know a lot of times music gets imported from North, it gets exported from North America to everywhere else around the world. I was going to say what needs to happen more is that music made by Africans in other areas be imported back to Africans in the U.S., you know. But then again,
we're going to have to do that ourselves because the industry... And if we can prove that there's a market for it, they'll do it. But I don't think they're really interested.
Well, I'm not even talking about them. I'm talking about in terms of the influence, though. Really, you know. But there has been some of that. Even in jazz, and you look at cats like Coltrane and even Dizzy Gillespie and other forces like that. Pharoah Sanders, you know, influenced by some. You know, African music, and you know, I think more of that needs to happen. I think that more of this, you know, communication in terms of musically needs to happen among African people, and I think that's something that'll happen as part of this process as we are uniting, you know, African people everywhere around the world.
Well, I think the song One Love is a concrete example of that, because One Love, if you look at the song One Love, the credits to it are Bob Marley and Curtis Mayfield, because There Ain't No Room for the Hopeless Sinner Who Would Hurt All Mankind Just to Save His Own. That's Bob lifted that from People Get Ready.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I always like to say that, you know, like what Archie Shepp, the great saxophonist from Florida, used to say. He says what Malcolm said Coltrane played, and I like to say that what Walter Rodney, what Bob Marley sang is what Walter Rodney wrote, and what Fela Kuti sang and played is what Thomas Sankara wrote. You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's always been a parallel between, as the Africans and the Caribbean had Bob and Peter and Walter, and on the continent we had Fela, who was in sync with Thomas Sankara, and Bob knew Walter Rodney. I mean, in Zimbabwe, they met in Zimbabwe.
Oh yeah.
What happened was, well, they knew one another from Jamaica, but what had happened was that what happened with Walter, he was under indictment for in Guyana, you know, because of he was fighting with Forbes Burnham, and he snuck out of the country through Brazil to go to the independence celebration in Zimbabwe. Now, Walter knew Robert Mugabe, and Robert Mugabe begged Walter to stay in Zimbabwe, and Walter, you know, declined because he said his fight was in Guyana, where he was born. But, you know, Walter had lived in Tanzania, and he actually taught Museveni, you know, the president of the current man that's in Uganda right now.
Yeah.
But no, Bob, they met in Zimbabwe, and Walter met in Zimbabwe at that particular time. And like I say, Robert Gabriel Mugabe begged Walter to stay in Zimbabwe, and he went back home, and he unfortunately was assassinated. I think it was June 12th, 1981, or whatever. Yeah, whenever. That was 81, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's one thing. When the movement is strong, the music, you hear the influence of it in the music, you know.
Better believe it. Yeah, you can hear it because, you know, Coltrane used to go to the, to hear Malcolm speak, and Sam Cooke used to go to Mosque number 27, or Temple number 27 in L.A. I mean, Sam Cooke, you know, he used to come to the mosque to hear a minister. At that time, he was John Shabazz, but I think he changed his name to Allah Akbar Muhammad. He's an older fellow now, but we used to listen to him. He was he sounded just like Malcolm, exactly like Malcolm.
Well, I want to get into a little bit more of this music, and we got a song called "Every Little Bit Hurts."
Brenda Holloway. You want me to play the music, and then we can talk about Miss Holiday?
Let's talk about Miss Holiday once we play this music.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So this is Brenda Holloway with "Every Little Bit Hurts."
Sigh, every night I wonder why you treat me cold, yet you won't let me go. Every little hurt counts, every little hurt counts. You say you're coming home, yet you never phone, leave me all alone. My love is a strong for you. It's a loneliness you've given me. I can't go on giving my life away. Toy, and you're the boy who has to say when I should play. Yet you hurt me, desert me. You will stay with me.
yeah, that's Sister Brenda Holloway out of Los Angeles, California.
Let's talk about Brenda Holloway. You knew her, didn't you?
I went to summer school with her. She came out of Watts, and the school Watts is the high school that they have is called Jordan High School, and she went to Jordan along with Walter. Well, the Whispers went there, and I believe Flo Jo, the track star. She went to Jordan, but you know, if I mention Flo Jo, we also had an Olympic champion that went to Fremont. Richard, I have to mention Richard Stebbins. He ran in the Olympics with Bob Hayes, and so we were very proud of Richard Stebbins. But yeah, she went to Fremont to summer school, and I remember her as she played all kind of instruments. She played violin. She was deeply into classical music, and she was super duper duper serious. And, you know, one of her attributes was she was very attractive. Hmm. I don't want to go into objectifying women, but, you know, that was one of, if you read things about her, most of the time they talk about how she looked. You know, she was supposedly the most gorgeous woman at Motown. And a lot of people from Los Angeles had a reputation of, like, being outspoken. And, Brenda Holloway was supposedly outspoken to the point where she went to Detroit, and at that particular time when she came, she came to Detroit, they came to her because they recorded her stuff in Los Angeles. So here was a woman that could play, you know, she could play the violin, she could play cello, she could play bass, she could read music. And, you know, for lack of a better word, she was more appealing to than a lot of the Supremes. And there was a big conflict between her and Diana Ross in particular. And she hit before the Supremes did, because, I mean, Brenda opened up for the Beatles.
Hmm.
And she sang, you know, when the Beatles came to came to America, it was Brenda Holloway who opened up the Beatles shows, and she had so many problems with dudes hitting on her, and trying to put her on that casting couch. I think she just threw in the towel. She was in the business from 64 until about 68, and then she threw in the towel. And, you know, she's come back recently, but she had too much talent and too much mouth. And another person that went to Fremont was a brother by the name of Bobby Tolan. He played professional baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals and the Cincinnati Redlegs. And I was reading about him. He ran track with us, and Bobby Tolan, they say he got in the leagues. Grew a beard, you're not supposed to do that in the 60s, and started talking back to people. But he was cold-blooded, and they couldn't touch him. But once he got injured, you know, that's when he had problems. And his son recently was shot, almost killed in Houston, Texas. That's something that we should basically take a look at, because his son was he didn't die, but I think he was trying to play professional baseball, but Brenda was like, you know, I don't know if that was what they had in the water, but Brenda and it's probably the time, I guess, you know, during that particular time. And she had so much talent that it was ridiculous, as you could hear.
Yeah, it was. That's good music. And one thing about it, you can hear. I know Alicia Keys, you're pointing out that Alicia Keys re-recorded that song on one of her albums.
Yes, sir.
And but you can hear her influence on Alicia Keys just listening to that song.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And she was, I mean, you can imagine someone at, you know, in 64, a woman that can read music, that could sing. But I mean, she was into classical music. That was another problem she had, you know.
Yeah.
She was in the Mozart, Bach, Beethoven, and all that kind of stuff, playing cello and viola, and you know, she was and could play bass, had a jazz group, you know. And then could sing. I mean, her singing was that was secondary. Yeah, the singing, her singing part was secondary. But you know, I guess her downfall was she was her looks. You know, it was like she couldn't get away from you know, men trying to capture her. You know.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Apparently, yeah. Because like I say, all of the, if you read the accounts of her, they start not with her talent, but how she was fine as wine in the springtime. You know, what one dude had a quote in there said that if looks would kill, then you know half the men in Los Angeles would be on the critical list. You know, that's how. I mean, that's how they described her.
Yeah, well, she's a talented sister, though. She's a talented sister, definitely.
Yep.
I want to give folks who are out there listening an opportunity to, you know, to say a little something, or, you know, email or whatever. You can call, and the U.S. number is 727-565-1599. The U.K. number, you can call 020-813-3-6629. Or you can call us through Skype for free anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and that's all one word, all lowercase. Or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. And we've got an email in. This email is from Onwale K. Fang. It says, Uhuru, Norman, and Binger. You all have really put a working formula together to make a tremendous impact on the music cyberspace scene. The Diaspora Music History Show is a winner. Keep up the good work. Appreciate
thank,
that.
Thank you, my brother.
Yeah. Let's go into a little bit more music.
Yeah.
We got. Go ahead.
I'll unite with that. Let's go.
We got a song by Etta James, and I really like this song. In fact, folks who saw that the movie Cadillac Records recently heard you heard Beyonce singing it, but I like the way Etta James did it. This is I'd Rather Go Blind.
When the refrain see you walk away, see you walk away from me, yeah. Ooh. Baby, 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 I'd rather be blind.
Yeah, that was Etta X. I guess a lot of people don't realize that at one time, Sister Etta had joined the Nation of Islam.
Let's talk a bit about Etta too, because she was somebody that didn't really take no mess either, was she?
No. She was. She tells a story about being down someplace in the South with Johnny Guitar Watson and someone else, and started talking back to, you know, some of the guys, you know, she had to apologize for calling this, she called the gentleman a cracker. And in order, she was refusing to apologize, but the guy put a pistol in Johnny Guitar Watson's head, and, you know, she did that, but no, she did not like that, because, I mean, Etta was born on the, she was born in Los Angeles and didn't go through that Southern thing, whereas Johnny and them guys had lived in the South, and, you know, I guess they had been conditioned to, you know, they were older guys, although they didn't take no stuff either, but I guess if somebody puts a pistol in your head, unless you're a Bunchy Carter or Huey P. Newton, most people would respond. If you see the Cadillac Records, which I think is, you know, it's part of its kind of, you know, kind of make-believe stuff. But no, that was her. Like, she joined the Nation and talked about listening to Malcolm, and she was very outspoken. If you listen to her talk and you read her book, Rage to Survive, you will see that she's been fighting all of her life. She talked about Jesse Belvin should be in the Hall of Fame, and she talked about how she really didn't care about the Hall of Fame because that was basically a Euro-American institution. But if, you know, you're going to talk about the history of rock and roll, that our people had played a role in that, so she'll go along with that. But she talked about, you know, the R&B Hall of Fame, how Jesse had been inducted into that, and she was happy for that. But Etta, Millie Jackson, Johnny Taylor, and, you know, there's a list of them that are known for Tyrone Davis for not taking any mess. David Ruffin, Eddie Kendricks, yeah. It's a myth that all the R&B singers were just puppets of the system.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we got some more Jesse music too. Actually, I thought I had kind of run out of some of his tunes, but we got some more Jesse Belvin, particularly his song "Guess Who." It's a real nice song.
Yeah, the "Guess Who" is. I remember B.B. King used to close his shows with that, and I think that's the one that the Gusano, whose name I won't mention again, I think the Gusano re-recorded that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess, you know, Gusanos are Gusanos, but they recognize good music.
Yeah. Well, let's play that tune real quick. This is Jesse Belvin, "Guess Who."
Really loves you. Someone really loves you. Guess who? Guess who? Someone really cares. Guess who?
Guess who?
Surely they
In that particular group was Jesse Belvin. I understand Jesse is singing the falsetto, and the great Johnny Guitar Watson is—I think he's playing a guitar on that. But that was a super group that was put together in L.A. The Shields, yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. That's that. You know, One musician I really like is Johnny Guitar Watson too. You know, I really love Johnny Guitar Watson's stuff. And
but you know,
go ahead.
Well, Johnny Guitar Watson is a legend, and Johnny could play the piano, he could play the guitar, he could play alto sax, he could produce, he could write, and he could talk his head off. I mean, he was doing a lot of the rapping before, you know, a lot of people did the rapping before it was rap, but he was multi talented. Are we gonna play his Asante Sana?
Yeah, we can play
Do we want to talk about Johnny now?
Let's rap a little bit about Johnny. Now you knew Johnny personally, didn't you?
Well, Johnny, yeah, I had the opportunity of meeting Mr. Watson on a number of occasions, and I remember seeing him at there was a club called the Adams West, which was like an after hours theater, and it used to open up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and Lou Rawls used to always open up before he had hits, and he would always get booed off stage because the people was late and people wanted to see if the Temptations, they were coming, they would put Lou on first, and they would put a King Pleasure or Oscar Brown Jr. But anyway, I saw Johnny there once, and that's where I saw Jimi Hendrix do his thing. But when you saw Johnny, you saw Jimi Hendrix. That's who influenced Jimi Hendrix. But anyway, Johnny, I met Johnny because he knew a lot of people that I knew. I used to live next door to H.B. Barnum. I have to mention H.B. H.B. is Aretha Franklin's musical director and has been for the last 25 years. So H.B. and Johnny they knew one another, but they're both from Houston, Texas. And I was going to do an interview with Mr. Watson, and I was introduced to Eduardo Manlon Jr., and his father was the leader of the liberation movement and Frelimo in Mozambique. And he came by my house, and my mother cooked dinner for him, and he met all my family, and me and him hit it off quite well, although he really thought I was just a cultural nationalist, skin nationalist racist, you know, because I would always be talking about, and he would be telling me about Eric Clapton and, you know, all of these British guitar players. So I say, you know, Eric Clapton, the boy is good, you know, but he's copying us. Hey, y'all, man, you're crazy. You know, you're just a racist. Blah, 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 blah. I said, okay, you want to roll with me to Johnny Guitar Watson's house? And he said, yeah. So I took him to Johnny Guitar Watson's house, and I told Johnny, this brother here is, his father is the head of the movement there. So he says, oh, the brother's, I can't use the word. He said, the brother is, his father, his dad is the chief. I said, yeah, Johnny, he's the chief. Yeah, you're right. So Johnny started telling these stories. You know, he was telling the story about how, he said some things about some people. I don't want to be negative. I won't go into all of that. But he was criticizing some people who won Grammys that didn't deserve them, because he was saying that Joe Tex had written and produced his thing, and he had written and produced his thing.
Hold on. You ain't got to worry about hiding no identities here. We can criticize whoever.
I really wanted to pay respects to Brother Lou Rawls, but it was Lou Rawls. It was Lou. But anyway, Lou had a reputation of being not the most outspoken of the pack. And so Johnny was telling the story. He said that Keith Richards approached B.B. King. And he says, if you roll with us, BB, you'll be able to stay in the biggest hotels. And he says, plus Keith can steal your SHIT, you know. And then he said, you'll also be able to get the prettiest women. And then Keith would be in the background, plus Keith can steal your boom. And he said, you can be able to, you get a big salary. And then he's whispering, plus he can steal your boom, 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 boom. And Johnny was always, he was an entertainer. So he had me and Eduardo Jr. basically on the floor crying, just telling those stories, you know. And he went back and talked to Eduardo Manlon, and, you know, they made some sort of pact. Next thing I know, Johnny came out and recorded a song called Santa Sana, which, you know, he definitely was he went back and did his homework and I guess learned a couple of words of Swahili. Well, Santa Sana, thank you very much, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, Johnny died on stage, and I think it was in Japan. But Johnny was he was there in the '50s, the '60s, the '70s, the '80s, and the '90s, and he was he was one of the most talented people. Etta James talked about him and Jesse Belvin being the best things that L.A. had produced, excluding Barry White, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why don't we play that song with Santa Sana?
Let's do that.
All right. This is Johnny Guitar Watson. The name of the song is Asante Sana.
Asante Sana, baby. Asante Sana.
That's Johnny Guitar Watson out of Houston, Texas, doing a Santa Sana. And if you listen to Johnny sing, you can hear, listen to anything by Johnny Guitar Watson, and you'll hear Etta James basically pattern her whole style after Johnny Guitar Watson.
Yeah, we might be able to get to play some more Johnny later on, because
I want to hear some Johnny myself.
Yeah, so we'll try to get some of that stuff in. We want to again let folks know out there who are listening, you can participate in the discussion that we're having here, or you know, you can ask us if we can play something. We'll see if we got it. The phone number here is the U.S. number is 727-565-1599. The U.K. number is 020-8133-6629. Or you can call us through Skype for free anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and it's all one word, all lowercase. Or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com.
Now, I want to, Bingo, there's something I always want to ask you. Does Skype have a melanin check? You can, huh? You say the African world.
No, I say that because, you know, we all over the place, so.
Every time I hear it, I have to bust out laughing. I'm saying, "What you got a Skype thing with some melanin? You have to do a melanin test or what?" Oh, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if your melanin's not deep enough, it may not pick up. I'm just joking. Anyway, we've got an email. It says Uhuru Binga and Brother Norman. Norman, it's so good to hear you on the Hoorah News. I hope this will be one of many appearances by the history master of music. Do you have any music by Solomon Burke? And if you could, say a few words about him. Great show, and that's from Ona Zene Ishitella.
Uhuru Ona. Would you want to talk, play the music and then talk about him? Because I got a hell of a story about Solomon Burke.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I'll go ahead and play a song. We've got Solomon Burke's None of Us Are Free. I like that song. So we're gonna play that None of Us Are Free by Solomon Burke.
And brothers, 'cause if you do, you can hear there are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will too. We all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. In darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other. Let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. Shining bright right before our eyes. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us is chained. None of us are free.
us are free. One of us is chained. None of us are free.
And that's the great, legendary Solomon Burke. Yes, sir. So how's it going so far, my friend?
Going good. We've got about 15 minutes left in the program. I know you were saying you had a story about Solomon Burke.
Yeah, Solomon Burke is a genius when it comes to moving a crowd. I remember seeing him in Toronto. It was a show put on by a brother by the name of Winston Clark, a Jamaican brother who was a promoter, His farm got a good pharmacy, give him a plug. And on that show was Chuck Jackson, the Delphonics, Leroy Sibbles, who's the lead vocalist of the Heptones. He's also a heavy bass player. And I believe it was Ray Goodman and Brown. And Chuck Jackson said that, you know, Solomon Burke is always coming up with some sort of way to steal the show. So, you know, everybody got up there and did their thing, and Solomon jumps up, and he was doing one hell of a show. But just before the show closed, he says, "I want to introduce my son." So you remember, this audience is 99.9 African people, and 90% of them are from Jamaica. So he jumped up, and he says, "I want to introduce my son, Haile Selassie Burke." And his son broke out, "I was born by the river in a little tent." He broke into "A Change Is Gonna Come," and that was the place. It just wrecked the place. So that was it. That was he stole the show. And after the show, we were talking to Chuck Jackson. He says, "You know, that Solomon Burke, he always come up with some mess to steal the show." And he said, "I have to admit, that was a good one. He timed that one. He knew his audience. He timed it perfectly." And yeah. People still talk about that to today. And Solomon Burke is the type of dude who I saw him many, many times. He'll meet you at the end of the show and shake your hand. Like, you know, if it's a small club, when you go out, you shake his hand as you're going out. And he also he used to sell had a little confectionery. What do you call it? Confectionery, where you sell stuff on the bus. You know, when the Africans couldn't eat in the South, he would. You know, he would have sandwiches, and so he always figured out a way to earn his cash. Also, he was in Shreveport, Louisiana. They arrested him and Sam Cooke, and I think Sam had about $10,000 on him, and he got this Euro American woman to get him some food, and that drove the white police officers crazy, and they made Sam and Solomon Burke take their clothes off and do a show, and they say Sam was never the same after that.
Man. Yeah, that's...
You can't believe that. That's rough.
That's how they do you, man. That's rough stuff, boy. You know, that people seeing the Five Heartbeats, that won't nothing. You know, when they stopped them and made them sing, that won't nothing compared
to... That was nothing, no.
Yeah. Well, we got just a little bit of time left. I know it was a couple more songs you wanted to hit folks with.
Yeah, well, going back to the Los Angeles thing, I wanted to play a song by the Vibrations called Cindy. Now, what happened with the Vibrations? Some of them came out of Jefferson High School, but they had a lead singer by the name of Ricky Owens, who was he replaced Eddie Kendricks for a minute in the Temptations, and Ricky. The Vibrations could basically compete with the Temptations, and maybe some people even beat the Temps. And the Temptations took the Temptations' walk is really the Vibrations did start at that. And I think the Vibrations also work with, like I say, my old next door neighbor H.B. Barnum. But Ricky Owens, he replaced Eddie Kendricks when Eddie left, and because he used to sing Cindy and Misty and. And of course, he would drive the women crazy. He was a very nice-looking brother and very humble brother. But this is some more of the history of Los Angeles, California, with the Vibrations and Ricky Owens out front.
Oh. Goodness. stop and give me two hot dogs and a strawberry soda.
And that was Johnny Guitar Watson. This has been a tribute to the late, great Jesse Belvin, whose life was cut short by colonial violence and imperialism. And no one knows what contribution Jesse Belvin could have made had he lived. And we cannot forget the fact that his manager wife, Joanne Belvin, also perished with Jesse on February the 6th, 1960, and they both, the accident took place in Hope, Arkansas, which is the home town of the first black president, William Jefferson Clinton.
Yeah, well, I want to appreciate you, Brother Norman, for doing this show, man. This is really important and really good show. And so I'm looking forward to you continuing to do this show.
Well, I plan to in the next 2 weeks put together something on Canada. All the artists that have come out of Canada, like Oscar Peterson, and there's a brother by the name of Harrison Kennedy who sang. Had the first million seller of African persons from Canada. He did. He sang "Give Me Just a Little More Time" with the chairman of the board and people like Deborah Cox and Divine Brown and Jason. You know, King Cosmos did a song about reparations and mix it up. I hope hopefully we can do that in 2 weeks.
If you right on.
Should awake in the still of night.
That's it for diasporic music.
Yep.
Stay tuned for the next program here on thewhoradio.com.
You know I care. Please give your love to me, dear. Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams. Sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright and bring you closer to me. If you should awake in the still of night, please have no fears, for I'll be there. You know I care. Please give
baby, baby.
Yes, you've been listening to a special rebroadcast of a tribute to Jesse Belvin. That was diasporic music with my brother Brother Otis and his co-host, Brother Nyabinga Zimbabwe. Well, stay tuned for the next 3 hours until 7 p.m., a special coverage from the August 18th Black Is Back Conference, which was held in New Jersey. And then at 7 o'clock, you can join me, Ron Bob Semple, with Golden Sunday Sounds, taking you up until 10 p.m. Here's a little more of Jesse Belvin.
Five social system. That's the world we live in. And if you raise the question of reparations, it makes it necessary for African people to come to terms with this. So much is done against us all the time. Demoralizing black people. You took my money. Took my resources for every damn thing we got. I want it.
We don't need no explanations.
All we need is
please. You want lyrics? We come correct. BTP, only moving with respect.